E, now, all the talk, two things, Phil Hogan and children returning to schools. So we're not going to do Phil Hogan now. We're going to do children returning to schools in the company of psychotherapist Coleman Nochter. How are you doing, Coleman?
Good, thanks, Ray. How are you?
Good, good. I was saying earlier on that I read a piece in The Guardian. Hundreds of psychiatrists in the UK have urged the government not to fine families for refusing to send their children to school, warning of anxiety if young people were asked to return to classrooms when they were not ready. So I think people realise there is a lot of anxiety and worry around what's happening over the next 10 days or so.
Yeah, I think the real difficulty is trying to decipher, are you unwilling to go back or are you unable? And you don't want to find someone who's unable. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
so
yes.
You have to err on the side of caution that some of the anxiety and hysteria is just part of the experience of what is a challenge. And some people will be able to manage that better than others. But we shouldn't punish those who are struggling more with it. We should support them, I think, from that point of view.
And even in all your work over the years, you have no idea either, in a way, because like people have been out of school for 6 months. This has never happened before.
It's never happened on a collective scale.
No, we've never
had such a communal challenge.
Yes, yes.
And it's a challenge, not a crisis. You know, this is... There is no crisis. This is a challenge. You know, there may be a crisis, but there isn't one yet. And I think we just need to manage the language around it. But I mean, I think we have to be the adults in the room when it comes to children. And I just have visions of, you know, maybe a very anxious teacher at the top of a class of junior infants with a visor and masks and PPE and jumping out of the way of anyone coming near them. And, you know, however coronavirus is contagious, anxiety is very contagious. So from the point of view, you can...
But you can't legislate for that. That's going
to
happen.
Oh, yeah. But I think we really have
teachers
to be as sensible
too.
As possible around it. And I think as parents as well, no matter how nervous or anxious we are about sending them in tomorrow, it's probably trying to manage our own anxiety around that, because tomorrow's going to be a big day. I mean, this is a kind of a deal breaker in terms of reboarding. It's the biggest chunk together. And I just think a lot of the narrative around second surges and it's only a matter of time and this is going to be this... I think it's unhelpful from the point of view. I would try and, for children, I would try and give them a sense of optimism that actually, in fact, this could be okay.
Yeah.
And there's so much language around 2020 is a disaster of a year and write it all off. And it's very glim. But for children, they need to be protected a little bit from that.
Well, I think, maybe we're not hearing it or reading about it, but a lot of children, I would imagine, are really looking forward to getting back to school.
90% of them are.
Yes,
yeah.
And everything that comes with it.
Yeah, and even the teenagers.
Yeah.
It's really
the structure, the friends, the activities, all of that.
So they've missed it so much. I mean, again, and you know, people say, but it's just been a long summer holiday. It's not been a long summer holiday. There's nothing to get up for. You know, the camps or the part-time jobs or whatever you'd normally do hasn't happened. And they are living in this kind of crisis of anxiety around going back and corona. And like, this is going to, like, the environment and the culture is going to be so important if you can create it. But I would worry that we, and it's to quote one of the guys in the WHO, perfection could be the enemy of the good.
Yes.
You know, we have to just try our best to get it right. Like, the idea that we don't get in until we have this perfect, the longer these children are out, the longer these difficulties are going to be.
The other thing is, and like, I've been in, I'd say, maybe hundreds of schools over the years for various reasons, and schools are very different. You know, they're like individuals. And the atmosphere in the school is often, most times, dictated by the principal. And, you know, principals, they vary. You'll have anxious principals, you'll have relaxed principals, you'll have organised principals, you'll have principals who aren't so organised. So everybody's experience is going to be different.
And that's why I think the guideline is only as useful as the person implementing it. And so, but I would say to schools and families, just control the culture. Do you know, like you'd say to me, is that a good school, Coleman? I'd say, it doesn't matter if it's a good or bad school. It's whether it's a good year or not. You know, so the culture within even a specific, you could have a wonderful school, but that second year group are particularly difficult.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get the culture and the buy-in and trying to get that. I think the primary school issue would be fine. I think they're fairly compliant. I think the 5th and 6th years will manage okay. My worry would be the middle group, where there's a sign, the kind of teenage angst is at its peak, and there's a little bit of trying to
That's
get your autonomy, you know, the first to third years.
Yeah, 12, 13, 14, 15.
And generally, we see most problematic behaviour around second year. It's kind of that kind of, you have a little bit of power, but not enough, and there's a little bit of ousting around.
And you're testing boundaries.
Yeah, and that's exactly where you're going to be at. And, you know, but I worry about, like, a friend was telling me that out there. Her daughter went back to gymnastics there, and mum said, "How did you get on?" And she said, "If I cough at somebody, I'm going to be banned for 3 weeks." And if you start with that narrative,
and
I heard you talking about the isolation room,
yes,
like why it had to be called solitary confinement yes. or whatever. It's a
no,
room.
I said solitary confinement. No, but it is called an isolation room.
When I heard it, that was the association I made as well. Yes. But I think, you know, it children are not going to be traumatised by sitting in a room for an hour while their parents come to collect them.
No.
That's not going to be the issue.
No.
But if I could say to anything, it's just let's relax. Yeah. Let's not overestimate the challenge here, but also don't underestimate our own ability.
Okay, individual questions then for you. And thanks for coming in and answering these questions. A quick question for Coleman. With children going back to primary school in bubbles and then pods within the bubble, our child is dyslexic, and we've been told that all children within a class group who attend learning support will all be placed in the same pod. We are concerned about this, as this is like streaming. Our daughter will be with all boys, as she is the only girl in the class who attends learning support, and also her self-esteem, which is pretty low due to dyslexia. She tries so hard to keep up with her peers and be just like them. Can you give us some pointers to help our daughter navigate this new structure?
Yeah, it's a topic close to my heart. I mean, I think from the point of view of the pods and the bubbles, they're all new. So it's like the seating plan for a wedding. You know, you're not going to make everyone happy. And I think there is an issue in that. Streaming isn't always a bad thing. You know, from the point of view of, would you prefer your daughter to be in with a group of five excellent readers? And she would feel far more kind of undermined by that process. The worry I'd have here is she's the only girl amongst a gang of boys. I think, I'm guessing this is a primary age child, but the gender kind of collegiality is a real important part, and I think she's right to feel a little bit miffed that she's on her own within that group. I would think that might, you just wonder where she get her voice in this group. You know what I mean? She'll either become the bossy leader, which it doesn't sound like she will be, or she'll just be kind of be in the shadow of the noisy boys.
What advice would you give to her?
This is really about bolstering her self-belief and trying to say that, you know, that she is not her dyslexia. Her dyslexia is just something like somebody who has to wear glasses. It's something you have to manage differently, but you're bright and you can draw and you've got these creativities, and absolutely overham that to every degree, because you just have to nurture the damage that it can do, because when you have a learning need, you do feel a little bit behind everyone else, and that's a little bit unavoidable. But from the point of view of scaffolding and support, keeping her spirits up is the best way to approach that.
I keep an eye on this, though.
But I think if she does feel that the boy thing is a problem, I would flag that with the school. I have no issue saying to teachers, can you just keep an eye out far? This is something I'm worried about. Never be afraid to say that, because just bringing the teacher's attention to it can change the whole way of managing that particular pod.
Great, good advice. Hi, we have twins who are going into second class in a new school. They're set to be separated for the first time. The easier going guy has been put in a class with only one of his old classmates, but he came out crying and doesn't want to go back. He had a little accident on the way home, so he clearly is stressed. He is my happy-go-lucky, a daydreamer, creative guy. His twin is a real perfectionist and is sporty. He's been put with six lads from their old class. Any tips on how to help? He would struggle making friends as he gets hyper meeting new people.
Yeah, the twin management is an issue. It's a bit of a lottery from the point of view. I've seen plenty of youngsters. If there's a dominant and passive twin, that dynamic can be particularly problematic for the passive one. Do you know what I mean? Where they kind of grow up in the shadow of somebody else. So separating them and allowing them to have their own identity within a class could be a good thing from that point of view. This is her happy-go-lucky daydreamer kind of easygoing kid. It's amazing how the children that we predict will struggle won't, and the ones that we think are fine will. And it's almost like these children kind of, because they coast through it, they're maybe not that emotionally tuned in. They're just getting on with things. But when they get emotionally challenged, they maybe haven't learned the emotional skills along the way.
You know, the coping mechanisms.
They say, oh, my youngest is thriving on neglect. They rear themselves, and then they'll hit a crisis point because they're trying to be older than they are, and they'll just miss gaps and they miss steps in it. So for this kid, it's really just trying to break it down. The six pals that his brother got and one that he got, he's right to feel a bit disappointed.
Sounds unfair. Yeah.
That does sound a bit unfair. It's just how the cookie crumbles. But manage the disappointment for him, but just absolutely show him again all the stuff he's able to do.
Yes.
Don't let him think that this is something he can't manage. He is social. He is happy-go-lucky. This guy will do okay. It's just the teething issues. It's just transition.
And they're in the same school.
So yeah, and he'll find his tribe within that new class for sure.
Can you ask Coleman, please? I have a 14-year-old going into third year. He has quite an addictive personality and plays a lot of PlayStation. I want to completely remove the PlayStation for the school term, as it is all or nothing with him. What's the best way to approach this? Should we just go cold turkey? Thanks.
as all the parents in the country tune in around the radio yes. to hear the answers to this. Everyone struggled. The screen time thing has gone out the window.
Yes, like that's a problem, isn't it?
Oh, massive.
And I was just saying to somebody the other day, it's 60 days to create a habit. So a lot of bad habits have been created during
lockdown,
haven't they?
Absolutely, from the point. And this is a real challenge because there has been nothing else for children to do. So they have... anyway, to answer the question, is cold turkey the way to go? No, it's not. What you'll do is you'll drive it underground, you know, from the point of view of... it is about re-regulating, so you're trying to get some resemblance of structure back. I would put it in, if he's third year, I'd get him to earn his screen time. So when he has his jobs done or when he has his homework done and he's doing a bit of study for junior cert, then he gets the screen time afterwards. So it's the dessert after the meat and two veg of the other stuff. It's hard one because there's a great way of managing this about self-regulation. If it's something that can be charged, like a switch or something like that, you charge the thing full and say you've one charge for the week. So you're teaching them to regulate themselves, regulate their own usage. So if they... It's like when your mother used to do the big shop on a Thursday and say, when they're gone, they're gone. Do you know what I mean? So you're teaching them to kind of spare it a little bit. So if you have a device...
Yeah, like but a PlayStation is just plugged into the wall.
That's the problem. But I would say earn it. Put in a system in place where he earns his time by doing the other stuff that you want him to do.
And generally, because I know in our house, like Roblox, for example, I don't know if you've been introduced to that. That's the current scourge.
I dream about Roblox.
It's the new Fortnite, isn't it? But what's the advice, the general advice to parents who've been obviously more lax because there's nothing else to do and have allowed their children more screen time than they would normally, and now they have to change all that because it's returned to school?
First of all, I wouldn't criticise anyone who's let it slip. Utterly human and what happened. But it does have to come back. We can't let the habit exist beyond when it was required. And so with school back, structure back, the stuff will naturally take up the time. So that will be a benefit, getting back into sports, getting back into things. But yeah, it's kind of sitting around the table and going, okay, new contract here. This is different. Right. And look, it's a difficult conversation, but if you let it keep going, then it's much more difficult to close a gate than open it. But we're in that now.
We all know that.
But
we're just
going to renegotiate.
Even at governmental level.
But I think renegotiate from scratch and say, it wouldn't go from blanket bans and prohibition. I just don't think that works. But I would, something around earning it. But we did what we did. We did what we had to do. Now we just have to do something different.
Okay. Final one then for you, Coleman. How can I get my daughter to go to sleep without me being in the bed or being beside her? Her mother and I have split up and she'll go to bed on her own for her mother, but not for me when I have her. She has separation anxiety with me, which I can understand. If you could give me any tips, it would be great. Now, it doesn't give an age there.
I'm guessing this maybe is a kind of latency age child between 6 and 10, maybe is my guess. Yeah. But the sleep problem is not the problem. That's her answer to the problem, which is she misses you and she wants to make sure that you're there as much as possible. So the work here is not about getting out of the bed from her. It's about reassuring her that you'll be there when she wakes up. And so it's really about, and I'm sure he's doing this already, but it's just investing in trying to reassure her of your presence. Like children who have separation difficulties, they're nervous about permanency and will you ever be back? And that's why peekaboo is a game that's there from early childhood. Gone back. You just have to get her concentrating on you'll be back and you're not going anywhere, and be consistent. When you're supposed to be there on time for the amount of time you're going to be there, and it'll build up. But for a simple tip, it would be kind of doing a little bit of a timer and say, I'll lie with you for 10 minutes, I'll lie with you for 9 minutes. But when you're doing it, it's not about removing something from her. It's about saying, I believe you can do this on your own and I'll be here in the morning. Okay. So it's about the message. The sleeping problem is just, it's her management of the problem. Yeah, it ain't the problem.
Yeah. Okay. Right, Coleman, thanks as always. And Coleman will return in a few weeks' time. Mind yourself. Thanks, Coleman Octor. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.